Hey, you found us. It's the Ben and Matt Sportscast. I'm Ben Glicksman with my tag team partner, Matt Story, and we are going to talk some college basketball, but also the big news in Major League Baseball following the Seoul series with Shohei Ohtani's interpreter racking up a $4.5 million gambling debt and then telling ESPN, oh yeah, it was all me. And then I asked my good friend Shohei to cover it, and he did. And then, no wait, he had no idea. The report I have heard, and I don't know this, is that it is illegal in the state of California to cover someone else's gambling debt. I believe that it is punishable by a significant fine and or up to 2 years in prison, and everything in between. So that would explain why he changed the story is, you know, Ohtani's lawyers, Ohtani's lawyers were probably like, hey, no. You didn't. You didn't cover his debts from illegal gambling.
Yeah, I heard that element. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, so I'll say this. I mean, kind of going back to when the story first came out and reading that, the red flags were just waving in my mind.
Yeah, because I mean, honestly, the first thing is it's Pete Rose and he's betting and he's found a go-between.
Now, I will say, as time has gone on and I've read some more, I'm less inclined to think that. And I don't know about you. I mean, I'll tell you why I am. One, I read that story that ESPN put out, I think two nights ago it was out, like a timeline of events of how they, you know, got the information and all that. And I thought, now, what you're saying changes my feeling a little because I did think, like, honestly, what was so wrong about the original story? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'm like, okay, you know, like if indeed that, you know, was the case, like, or if it wasn't the case, I guess that was my thought. If that wasn't the case, if that was a fib, it's a pretty good fib, you know, like, hey, my
best buddy
got in trouble. I have a lot of money. I helped him out, you know, don't worry about it. You know, like, I'm a good guy, you know, like, I mean, for PR, it's not the worst thing. So to change that story was like, why don't you change that story? You know, like, it's not great, but it's like, well, hey, you know, this guy's a friend of mine. He got in some hot water. I got the money to help him. We're good. But then it changes, you know, and I don't know if you read, you know, the Athletic story that was out last night, that, like, there's some errors in the guy's history, you know, that the guy said he graduated from UC Riverside. They say they have no record he ever attended there. He said he worked for the Red Sox with Okajima. The Red Sox say he never worked there. So, like, maybe the guy is just the patented liar and conned his way into Ohtani's camp. And Ohtani really didn't know what was going on. I mean, maybe I'll be proven naive. I may very well be. But I'm more inclined to believe that now than I was, 3 days ago or whenever it came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that we're, I guess where I land on this guy is Ohtani's friend.
Right.
And like you said, the easiest explanation is he had gambling debts and Ohtani paid it. Like, that's the simplest, cleanest explanation. And now, now learning that paying off illegal gambling debts exposes Shohei Ohtani is bad.
That's interesting. I hadn't heard that, and I guess I get it, but at the same time, like, I don't know. That seems like, well, hey, you know, I didn't. I mean, if I didn't do the gambling, but I got the money to help somebody out, like, I don't know. Common sense says, like, hey, okay. I mean, I guess there's a slippery slope there. You know, like, well, who says you didn't and all of that. Another thing that came to my mind this morning, and maybe this is overly simplistic, but I was kind of thinking about it this morning, is like, if you're to believe that Ohtani was the one actually racking up these debts, that he's got a major gambling problem and he's the one, which I'm not sure I do, his contract that he signed doesn't play into that, does it?
No.
I mean, he signed for big money, but he deferred almost all of it for 10 years.
Yeah. I mean,
so
that's the thing.
A gambling addict wouldn't be like, yeah, I'll take 99% of my money 10 years from now. They'd be like, no, give it to me all. I need it now.
Yeah.
I got to get out of this hole.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, he's, you know, more rich than Barkley. And sure. And so he can afford, like, that $4.5 million is probably 1 day's worth of marketing campaign work for a brand in Japan for him.
It probably is. And that's the flip side of what I just said, you know, is like, well, okay, he doesn't need the big money from MLB because he's making a lot elsewhere. And that's why he was able, you know, so you could say, well, that's why I said, maybe that's overly simplistic to say like, well, you know, he took the money later. I'll admit, like, I mean, I come at it with a couple of biases. One is, you know, that I'm a cynical type. So that's why initially I read it and I'm like, ooh, I don't know. But I also kind of like the guy. He's not my favorite player, but I've enjoyed watching him. And yeah. More to the point, I like the Dodgers. I want the signing to work out. I was happy when he went there. So I admit I have a bias of maybe wanting him to be hands clean and continue to be a great player now that he's with the Dodgers. I always think people should acknowledge their bias. I'm going to do it. If this was somebody who played for the Diamondbacks, I might be a little bit more like, oh, yeah, right, you didn't have anything to do with it.
Well, I wanted, where I thought we were going to go with this discussion, because I agree with you, and I think, well, okay, where I thought we were going to go with this discussion is how pro sports attitudes towards gambling have changed so much in the last decade that it like, doesn't can. Matter.
I think that's a fair thing to discuss, yes.
But to get back to this and Ohtani and the whole issue with what we're seeing, I think it's one of those things where, and I'm stealing this point from Eno Saris from The Athletic, but there wasn't a rule against covering someone else's gambling debt in the CBA, right? Like, right. There's no, right. You cannot gamble. That's
right.
True. And boy, is it a bad look for the Dodgers and for the people who are around baseball. Like, we're going to have to tighten up those reins, because I'm sure the guy who gambled was not allowed to gamble, but
right.
Paying someone else's debt for gambling is not banned. Like, maybe it's right. A thing, but and this was Eno Saris's point, this is not a domestic violence case where we know how to handle it. This is not a player gambling where we know how to handle it. This right. Is a player covering a debt, and it's like, boy, we're probably going to need to address that in the next CBA.
I suppose, yeah. But it's also, I don't know if this is where that guy, I didn't read that particular article, but like, no, I don't think there should be. I mean, unless there are more details to come out about his involvement, there should be no baseball-related punishment for it.
No, I don't think so either. And that's,
I mean,
and like, the thing is, if you
he should be playing, and no issues there.
And if you want to change that rule because you don't like the appearance of impropriety, that's fine. But you can't retroactively ding him.
You can't.
Saris's point was like, you know, before this whole Astros cheating scandal. The Yankees got a slap on the wrist for doing that, for, you know, video feed and things, but there wasn't a rule against it at the time. Then there was a rule, and then you came down hard on the next guy. Same thing here. There is no rule, so you say, hey, we don't like that.
Yeah.
We're putting in this rule, and then the next guy is going to be in a lot of trouble.
True. And then, and maybe this is sort of where you're, you know, like, sports gambling is not illegal anymore. Now, the form of this guy's gambling was, apparently.
Yeah, because he was using an illegal bookie. But,
right.
But the leagues are part owners and definitely co-branders.
Yeah,
with all
yeah.
of these DraftKings, sports.
BetMGM, Caesars. Yeah. I mean, you know, every one, well, not the Coyotes, but the three, stadiums here in town, State Farm, Chase, and the Footprint Center all have a sports book either in them or right attached to them now. That's not alone. I mean, I'm sure a lot of places have them. The states where it's legal, in most states it is now. It's a moneymaker. The sports have leaned into them, if not outright embraced them. Now, I was also thinking this a couple days ago when this came out. You know, the guy says, apparently, you know, he did all his betting. He never bet on baseball. And I always think that feels a little bit like when people, you know, get caught for steroids and it was, you know, PEDs. It was never to actually improve my performance.
Yeah, it was just
to heal up. It was accidental. I mean, if we're to believe this guy had a raging gambling addiction, like he apparently told the team, he wouldn't be tempted to bet on the sport he knows the best.
Oh, and like, the sport where he has theoretically inside access because
inside information. I mean, when I worked for the Cardinals, I didn't have a ton of inside info. I was down the food chain. But if I had found myself in trouble with gambling, I feel like the first thought would have been, well, you know, I happen to know that the Cardinals aren't going to, you know, the starting, you know, defensive end isn't going to play. So I'm going to take the over because they're going to give up more points. I mean, isn't that just a natural thing? Like, you know, man, I'm in hot water. I'm losing all kinds of money. Well, I happen to know that the Angels have some injuries and I should bet the under on their season wins now or something like that.
Well, and it's the ethics. It's weird that, like, you don't have any ethical problem with the illegal gambling through a bookie, but right. then you wouldn't cheat that bookie by using your knowledge.
Right. I mean, yeah, I don't know that I buy that. And I've never quite bought that when people get into, you know, like, well, I mean, there were the football players, you know, last year, a few guys got suspended for, you know, like, well, they didn't bet on their team. Like, man, I mean, now look, those guys apparently were not in deep, I guess, you know, and so maybe that's true. But, you know, if you're really millions of dollars in the hole, you're going to be most likely, I feel like, to bet something you know well and not be like, you know, now, again, I've never had that and hopefully I never will, you know, but I feel like the logic says, well, do I want to bet on a basketball game that I don't know anything about? You know, I'm just guessing. Or do I want to bet on, you know, the Angels to lose the next seven games because, you know, their two starting pitchers are out and Trout's out. And I go, well, yeah, I'll take the money line against them every time. I kind of feel like that's what you do. But maybe if you get into that position, you're not thinking logically. I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows? But you're right. I mean, going back to what you said a few minutes ago, like, it's hard to muster a lot of outrage. I don't have it. About, you know, even if we found out Ohtani was the one, I mean, unless he was gambling on Angels games, I don't think I would have any outrage. If he was betting on basketball and football and golf tournaments and you know, lacrosse competitions, like, okay. I mean, yeah. the sport is telling you, use these services to bet, man, do it. Yeah, it's so much fun. Jamie Foxx, he's, you know, the Mannings. You know, all these
Kevin
things.
Hart.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, and they all want, you know, and I'm fine with it, by the way. Like, I'm not saying this in a like tisk tisk manner. Like, I got no problem with sports gambling being legal. You know, are there downsides to it? Yeah, there's downsides to everything. I don't necessarily think we should make sure that people, you know, because if it's not legal, people are still going to do it. It's existed in some form for many, many years. You know, so I got no problem with it. That's why I'm like, I don't, okay. If he got it, you know, unless it comes out that he was throwing games for the Angels, which would be hard to believe since he was the best player in baseball the last 3 years. You know, if it was like, oh man, he, you know, he bet against them and that's the game that he, you know, gave up six runs in the first inning. I'd have a problem with that. That's bad. But beyond that, I really don't.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's where I come down on this is like, Ohtani hasn't done himself any favors by being not, you know, not aggressively antagonistic with the media, but just unavailable. And like,
he's evasive, but he was always evasive with the Angels too.
Yeah.
It just kind of went under the radar because it was the Angels. Yeah. And I think it'll probably still, I mean, if this story blows over, and it's an if, it may not, staying in LA was smart for him. Like, the thought that he was going to go to Boston, New York, one of the, I don't think that would have worked because he wasn't available much with the, I think he only talked, you know, like once a week
when he stopped,
and it was pre-planned.
I heard that he had stopped giving interviews by mid-August last year when he was like the leading MVP candidate. And it was like, well, what do you mean? And I guess this is something else I saw from Eno Saris is the baseball writers are, it is a protest they are filing with the league about, you know, it's collectively bargained. These guys have to be available and you need to punish them if they refuse to participate.
Which there should be. I mean, I know there is in the NFL. You have to be, you know, available once a week.
I'm just here so I don't get fined.
Which, and there is. I mean, you know, guys don't do it and they do get, you know, fine or something along those lines. And maybe he has been. I don't know if MLB really publicizes those. I mean, I don't think the NFL publicizes them. They publicize the fines for on-field stuff, you know, the illegal hits and stuff like that. But I don't think they ever say, like, this guy was fined, you know, $20,000 because he wasn't available during the week or something. You know, but yeah, I mean, he's been evasive. He seems like an interesting character in some ways. And I think there's probably a cultural thing to it in, you know, like because he's a non-English speaker, we don't look at him the same way maybe that we would if this was an American, you know, like he gets, you know, he gets married. No one even knew he was like dating some, all of a sudden he's just married. Like there's some oddities to him, but hey, everybody's got oddities. You know, I mean, he seems like a different guy and yeah, it doesn't seem like reaching out to the media is one of those things he values much, which can backfire on you. When you don't make, I mean, I always will say now it's changed the last several years, but in the heat of the Tiger Woods scandal, you know, 2009, 2010, the golf media was a feeding frenzy because he did not go out of his way to be their pal when he was on top of the world. And so as soon as he wasn't on top of the world, man, they were like a pack of dogs. It was like, yeah, this is our chance to get back at this guy who has given us rote answers and said no to us 1,000 times. Like, all right, time to go. And maybe that will happen in this case too.
Yeah. It's definitely a possibility.
Currying favor with the media still helps. I mean, I look at Brett Favre over the years, some of the scandals he had. Look at Phil Mickelson, not so much anymore, but you know, some of the earlier stuff, like, you know, having the media in your pocket can help a lot, can make some negative things seem like, well, it's not really that big a deal. He's a good guy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's one of those things where I'm not sure if this happened in New York or Boston that you would be able to just, you know, pay no attention here. But the Dodgers have so many things going on, right? That, yeah, okay. So this Ohtani thing, if they decide like, yeah, we're not going to make him available, we're going to put him out of the way until this blows over, it's like, you can still talk to Mookie Betts, still talk to Freddie Freeman, find out what's going on with Bueller and Kershaw's rehabs.
Exactly.
You know, ask questions about Yamamoto's start and, you know, the fact that he got shelled in spring and shelled again in, you know, and it's
in the opener or his opener. Yeah. I mean, and I also just don't think that LA, even though it's huge and there's, you know, a bunch of major sports, it's not the intense media market that you see in the Northeast. You know, the LA Times has been kind of gutted with you know, layoffs.
Aggressively so.
Yeah. I think LA, I've never lived there, but I think LA is a bigger Phoenix. You know, if a team is really good, then there's a lot of eyeballs and the Dodgers are really good. And obviously there's going to be pressure on them with the money they spent in Ohtani, you know, I'm not saying, but I just don't, I don't know if the people there, the media there have the stomach that the New York people do to like, you know, just be, you know, like I said, a pack of dogs and you're going to, you know, we're going to stand at his locker every day. I don't care if he says nothing. I just think, you know, I saw it again. I'm going to compare it. It's not LA, but it's the whole golf thing with Saudi Arabia. Like, you know, the golf media was very intense. And then, you know, I read some of them say, you know, well, why bother still asking the questions we know what answer we're going to get? Like, that's the point, man. you're supposed to still ask the questions. You're supposed to be aggressive on this. But, you know, I think the Dodgers could just wait this out, like you said. Just wait it out. Put him in the lineup. He's not pitching this year. So you don't have that, you know, but he's in the lineup. But now the problem comes in is if he underperforms. That's where, if he's hitting 200 at the end of April, you know, then it's like, well, what? Is this affecting him? What's happening? Oh, my God, this huge investment you made. What's wrong? You know, that is, but if he goes out and hits and the Dodgers are winning, I feel like this will blow over by the end of April.
Yeah. I mean, very similar to what we've talked about with many different athletes. If you're still in a position where you can perform,
yeah,
then we'll go back to focusing on that.
We kind of lose sight of it. Like, other things come up. There's other things that, you know, I mean, we're heading into the playoffs. LA will be focused on the Lakers and the Clippers and the LA Kings. And then the draft is coming up. That's a big national thing, you know. I mean, it's just, we move on to other things. So unless there's more to this, I don't know that it's got a lot of legs. And, you know, I just, like, so few stories have long-term legs unless more things come out. And maybe there will be, but if what we're hearing is all that's come out, even if it's not all the truth, if it's all that comes out, you know, and so far this interpreter guy seems to be willing to completely fall on the sword for him, right or wrong, true or not. You know, as long as that's the case, I'm not sure there's much here.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things about if you stonewall the media like he does, it's not out of the ordinary for him to just not talk again.
Right. And again, I think the LA media, you know, the Lakers are going to be in the playoffs or play in. What's going to happen with LeBron? They're going to stay. Can the Clippers, you know, finally do something? They're moving in their new arena next year. Blah, blah, blah. You know, we move on to other things. You know, you got Jim Harbaugh there, the Chargers. You got, you know, the Rams made the playoff. Like, there's other things that get your attention. If this story doesn't continue to grow, it'll be like, you know, I think we'll get to May or June. It'll be like, hey, remember when that was a thing? Mm-hmm. Like, remember that story in March? Yeah, whatever happened with that? I don't know.
Yeah. Especially if he's got like 22 homers by the end of
exactly. If he's performing well, yeah. Now if this, you know, if it becomes a distraction, I mean, this guy's with him all the time, and so, you know, now you got other people around you, and you know, it could be something that mushrooms in terms of just on field performance. I mean, if he's, like I said, if he's, you know, a month in, he's hitting, you know, 208 and he's got one home run. Like, what's going on? You know, that's a different story if that happens.
Yeah. Well, let's pivot to college basketball. And before we get into the tournament, let's bring it closer to home for ASU. The will he, won't he saga of Bobby Hurley's extension has ended and effectively got him an extra year. He signed a 2-year extension now, as opposed to signing it last season. So
he signed through 26 now?
Yeah.
26 season. Yeah.
And it's like, okay.
Yeah. Cool. That's pretty much my reaction. I mean, you know, it's, we texted about it and I said, you know, I think I said something to the effect of, well, that's good, I guess, maybe. And you responded with, you know, it's better than trying to hire a new coach without an 18, and I agree. Yeah. So that's sort of why I say that's good, I guess, maybe, because I'm not really sure that him still being here is the greatest thing, but it's probably better than any realistic alternative at the moment we're in right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been thinking about it a little, and I mean, we don't have to go too deep down the road with him, but we've talked a lot this year, in some ways I'm thinking, like, have I let him off the hook too much in my analysis of why the basketball program has failed to, you know, I do think there are institutional problems with the university. 100% I'm not moving off that. But maybe I've been a little bit too much like, well, there's nothing he could do any better. There probably is. Like, I'm not sure he's that great of an in-game coach.
I agree with that. Our offense,
you know, his recruiting's been up and down. Some really good fits, some really poor fits. Like, you know, there are things that he could do better. Now, even if he did them all at 100%, we might still be a, you know, first four team like last year.
Yeah. I think the offense has been down. The free throw shooting, after those initial guys left, the free throw shooting has been bad.
Free throw and three-point shooting, which is, you know, I mean, in the college game today, if you can't shoot threes, you're probably going to get left behind. And we've not been a good three-point shooting team for years since that, you know, Shannon Evans, Cody Justice, Trey Holder group. You know, that you know, was a very good offense, and the whole guard you thing. And I saw, I can't remember who it was, somebody tweeted out our like national ranks and conference ranks in scoring the last, you know, 5-6 years has been bad. Worse than I would have imagined, honestly, as far as, you know, like, you know, the defense got better the last 2-3 years, and that's good. But, you know, like, man, we just don't score enough. And the game this year, from afar, we talked about it last week, neither of us paid that much attention to college basketball this year, but having looked at some scores and even some of these tournament games, like, it's become a higher scoring game than maybe it's been. I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's rule changes or whatever, but there's a lot more college games I see played in the 80s, 90s, even 100s than what I'm used to. And we didn't keep up with that at all this year.
Yeah, no, we, as evidence most clearly in our Pac-12
right.
conference tournament game,
right.
where we,
and the last regular season game when, you know, I think we scored 50-some and went the last, you know, 8 minutes with one basket, took a, you know, 11-point lead and lost by 8 or something like that. I mean, you just, now I know the whole Jose Perez thing, he leaves the team in the middle of the trip, and that was bizarre, and when I say there's been good fits and bad fits, he, you know, that's a name that comes to mind, as he was obviously a bad fit. He mm-hmm. got in some trouble earlier in the year, got benched, and then he leaves in the middle of the last weekend. And obviously that was not a good fit. But still, like, man, I always come back to, you know, Greg Popovich has said this so many times, like, you know, it's who puts the ball in the basket more. And you know, like, you got to stop the other team. That's true. But you've got to be able to make shots. You got to be able to score points. And we didn't do it well enough. And it's been not just a this year problem. And so, like I said, where I started this, like, maybe I've let Hurley off the hook a little too much in my own mind of, like, oh, you know, Michael Crow sucks. And I agree with, still, I still believe that 100%. And the university doesn't support basketball. I still believe that 100%. But there's things that he's not good at. And could use some improvement after 9 years.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a point that I've seen sort of everywhere. We've made it a bunch, you know, a lot of ASU media, such as it is, ASU fans, the basketball arena, lack of improvement, lack of anything. It's like, yeah, we're not going to, you know, the Big 12's better than the Pac-12 at basketball.
Oh, yeah.
So we're just not going to compete.
To expect to compete would be sort of akin to expecting a miracle, you know, like just a magical season where, you know, some transfer becomes a player of the year candidate, and all of a sudden we're just we can't miss threes, and it's like, you know, one of those like Disney movie type stories where it's like, man, how did this team go from this to this? Is it possible? I mean, I suppose, but it's not realistic.
Yeah.
So, no, I mean, that's the frustrating thing when you compare, and I, you know, I've meant to do this. I haven't done it yet. Compare, like, the 9 years of Herb Sendek to the 9 years of Hurley. We're at the same amount of time now. And I could be wrong here, but I would bet that our average conference finish under Sendek was better than it was under Hurley. And it was a tougher conference when Sendek was here.
Yeah.
Certainly in the first half of Sendek's tenure, it was a very good conference. Now, by the end, it had started to wane. But Hurley has had a conference that, for the most part, has been very weak over his tenure. I mean, one Final Four team, I believe, in that entire – well, two, I guess UCLA did make one. You know, very few, like, number one or number two seeds. Not a lot of, you know, NBA talent. I mean, it's the conference isn't what it was 15 years ago, and he did not take advantage of it at all.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's 100% true. We need to look at ourselves, right? We're not spending money as a school. We're not raising NIL money that well as a fan base. But I'm with you. You said something a couple of weeks ago about Kenny Dillingham that I want to bring up again because I think it applies equally here. It's not us, you know? Like, it's not on you and me to foot the bill to build the program.
No, it shouldn't be, at least.
You know?
Yeah.
And so when I, you know, when Hurley comes out and says, you know, NIL is a big problem here, it's like, okay, well, you go find people with money, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's a heavy ask of the common fan, which is what we are. I don't have millions of dollars in the bank. I work full time and I have money to spend, you know, on fun things, but I don't have just billions to throw around, and most people don't. Not only you're asking us to buy tickets, pay for parking if we go, buy concessions, buy, you know, the things that we've been asked to do as fans for decades, but now we're also supposed to fund the roster. And it's like, man, that's a hard ask. It really is, as just Joe fan, to be like, you know, well, all the things that you did before, you still have to do them, and they cost more. You know, like, ticket prices have gone up, but you know, all that stuff costs more than it did 5 years ago, 10 years ago. But now we also need you to donate to the Sun Angel Foundation or Collective or whatever it is, so that we can pay our players. It's like, man, I just don't know if I got it. I love ASU, but I, you know, come on.
Yeah.
It puts those coaches in a tough spot, and I feel more for Dillingham than Hurley in a way, because Hurley's been here pre-NIL, and I made that point, you know, a few weeks back. You know, it's like, if Hurley was rocking everything for 6 years and then NIL came in and things started to unravel, I'd say, well, boy, that's a big change. He wasn't. Dillingham is in this era, and that's why the whole NIL thing is maddening. Because it's like, you know, well, the school can't pay them directly, so we need you to do it. Like, man, I don't have the stomach for it, I guess. Like, I think they should be able to make money. I know you're going to be a little shocked to hear me say this, because he's a guy I haven't liked for a long time, but I sort of agree with what Nick Saban said. Like, NIL was supposed to be for, hey, you became a star, and now you have marketability. You're Bryce Young, you're the starting quarterback at Alabama, and Dr. Pepper wants to put you in a national advertising campaign. Awesome. That's great. It wasn't supposed to be
to get you to show up.
Let's pay the high school kid who might be a backup receiver to come here. That wasn't what it was supposed to be, and that's kind of what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, it's like, you know, you've got your whatever budget, and you have to figure out, like, where you're going to spend it, how you're going to spend it. And I hear the, you know, the remorse from our off season talking about basketball. And it's like, well, that was a, you know, tournament team had a chance to have a lot of guys coming back. And instead we get like nobody coming back, and it's all, you know, they all left for NIL money or, you know, greener pastures or whatever. And it's like, yeah, man, that is a bummer.
I mean, it is. But yeah, I mean, like, NIL to me, just my vision of it, and I think what people in general envision, was not meant to be like, hey, let's make sure Warren Washington comes back for his last year of college eligibility. And that's no slight on him. He was a solid player for us. He helped us, you know, be a pretty good team 2 seasons ago now. But like, that's not what it was supposed to be. Was, hey, James Harden's here, and we could, you know, we could take advantage. He's got marketability. People know James Harden. Let's put him on billboards. Let's put him in an advertising campaign, you know, and let's make sure he can benefit from it financially. Great. Got zero issue with that. But the whole, like, hey, we need you fans to you know, pay for our roster, like, something's got to be done to change that, because I don't think, maybe outside of a few diehard fan bases in the SEC and whatnot, like, I'm not sure there's the collective stomach to do that year after year after year, because it's not just like a, hey, pay for a roster and they're here for 4 years. No, it's, hey, pay for them and then pay for them again to come back. And yeah, get them more money so that they won't transfer right away.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is where it comes back to, like, you know, we need to just end the charade and make them employees. And then the university can't put their hand out and say, you need to pay them. And they're like, no, you need to pay them. Yeah. And if you don't, then you don't want to compete. That's fine.
Yeah.
If you choose not to, that's your choice as a university. But, you know, the notion of, like, well, we can't do it, so we need you to, man, that doesn't hold up for me.
Yeah. Well, and I think we're going to get this test case now with Dartmouth, and that's, you know, right, private schools. It's, you know, public schools have been able to avoid it, but, you know, what are private schools going to do?
Right.
And
right.
And I'll tell you where it's going to be really interesting really quick is Notre Dame. You know, okay, yes, Dartmouth, interesting. Stanford, more interesting. Notre Dame football, incredibly interesting.
There it would be, yeah. You know? Yeah, you know, I mean, and I realize it's not just a snap of the fingers to say, okay, now all these guys, now these athletes are employees. Like, there's a whole lot that goes in, you know, there's taxes and there's insurance and there's unions. And I mean, there's a lot of stuff that goes beyond my ability to, you know, comprehend and understand. That said, I think it's the only natural ending point for this is to just be able to pay them and, you know, basically treat it as a professional sport. Cause in many ways that's what it is. Especially college football and basketball. You know, every team gets X amount of money and you spend it how you want to spend it. If you want to spend on a superstar point guard, then you have less available for the, you know, the backup center, or maybe you want to distribute it better and have a deeper team. I mean, like, it's a salary cap type of feel. I think that's the only way to have any really sort of like competitive equality is to do that. Again, not going to be done in a year or even 10 years. But to me, that's the only landing point that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, for sure.
So, I don't know. But yeah, I don't dislike Dillingham. I mean, I don't dislike him at all. And I don't even really fault him for that, but it's gonna wear out quick. And, you know, and that's what I was getting at a few weeks ago when we talked about it. It's like, you know, well, we need you all to step up and give us money so we can pay. It's like, man, there's not the passion here for that. There hasn't been the passion to fill the stadium. Now you're asking people to show more passion, to give more money so that we can pay the players. And I know it's chicken and egg, because it's like, well, if you're not going to pay the players, then you're not going to have a good team.
I mean, I
understand that, but still, it just doesn't exist here. It's going to fall on deaf ears for the most part.
All right, well, let's pivot and let's conclude by talking about the tournament and the teams that are actually playing meaningful basketball.
Yes.
You know, we get our fun, you know, 14-11 advance matchup going to overtime yesterday with
great
Oakland and NC
night.
State.
Yeah, that was a fun game.
It is definitely noteworthy, I think, that, you know, the ones and twos have been okay.
I mean, I think the first round there was 1-3 and 1-4 that got beat. And yeah, so far now there's 3-1s and one more 2 that play today. But so far they're all, you know, undefeated. Four of the top 8 have advanced. The other 4 could advance today. So, you know, I think that would be okay. We've discussed this over the years with the tournament that, like, you love the upsets, but you don't really want a Final Four that looks like last year's. I mean, no slight on those teams, but, you know, a Final Four game between FAU and San Diego State was hard to get the blood pumping.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could get, you know, into the Sweet 16 and you had your mostly your ones and twos and threes, and like, okay, you're getting the best teams. those should be good games, and you're going to find out who really is the best team rather than a team that, you know, beats a 15, a 10, an 11, and an 8. And it's like, well, was that team even really that good? Or did they just kind of maneuver their way through against bad teams?
Yeah. But, you know, I think there's been, we've gotten some excitement. We've had some overtime games, double overtime.
Yeah, I saw that last one last night. Went to two OTs. Yeah, Creighton ended up just blowing them out in the second OT. I think Oregon didn't score until the last, 30 seconds of that OT or whatever. But a good run for Oregon. Going through the conference tournament and, you know, beat South Carolina pretty convincingly and pretty solid. There's one more today, I believe, playing starting right now, I believe, but pretty solid for the Pac-12. Got four teams in, all four advanced to the round of 32. Arizona's in the Sweet 16. And the two that lost yesterday were certainly, you know, competitive against higher seeded teams.
Yeah.
I mean, Washington State played a 2 and Oregon played a 3, and that Washington State Iowa State game was close for most of it. Iowa State pulled away at the very end. And obviously the Creighton, you know, went to double OT. So been a nice, you know, I've seen a lot of people say it. It's kind of a, you know, it's one of those like good, but also not good. Like, been a pretty good sports academic year for the Pac-12. Football was really good. Had multiple playoff contenders, had a team, you know, make the playoff and win a game, get to the national championship game. Basketball, you know, acquits itself pretty well. Four teams in the tournament, they all advance. And it's like, if the conference was staying together, you'd say, well, there's hope for the future. But as we know, all those teams are going other places. So it's like, well, I guess there's not that much hope for the future.
Yeah, I suppose for me, the hope is that the Pac-2 enjoy these extra shares.
Yeah. What do you think happens there? I mean, do they just co-opt the Mountain West and become a conference? Is that the most logical endpoint?
Yeah, I think so. Or that the ACC collapses to the point where, you know, someone in Stanford Cal made the right move in their contract negotiation to give them an opt-out. If Clemson and Florida State leave, we can revisit this.
Yeah. That's a thought. Who knows what's going to happen with all the different machinations. So.
But I could see if those two were to come back.
Yeah.
Which I think is
plausible.
A realistic, if not likely, at least, like you said, plausible outcome.
Yeah.
You know. You
rebuild something there. I know it's been joked about. I think you and I have joked about it that, like, you know, over the next, you know, two decades, do we have, you know, does everybody end up involved in like two or three conferences? And then we almost split those conferences up into regional alignments and we end up back where we started.
Yeah.
You know, kind of feels like it wouldn't be shocking if, you know, by 20 years from now, we have the Big 12 West and the Big 12 East and the Big 12 West is essentially the old Pac-10, or something like that. It's like, you can see that. Who knows? Anybody who puts, you know, pen to paper or, you know, goes, you know, and types a column out and says, here's where college sports is going to be in 10 years. You're just guessing. Because, yeah, the ACC thing, who knows where that goes? Like, I read a little bit about it. If either one of them win their ability to get out of this deal, then it feels like it is just like open season, because no conference contract means anything, apparently. It's like, well, who knows where everything settles or if it ever settles.
Yeah. It's an interesting one. I think we are going to see a significant change with this ACC stuff, though.
Yeah.
Like, what we just saw with the Pac-12 could really, truly happen again in the next handful of years, because Florida State made all the noise and they were, you know, cajoling, begging, fighting, anything and everything to try to get this to end. And Clemson went about it differently, but got to the same conclusion of like, yeah, no, we're going to go to court and try to just get this to end.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know. All the legal, you know, back and forth, I don't know enough about or want to, you know, pretend to handicap because I don't know where it's going to be. But I mean, from everything I've read, the little I know, that, you know, the contract for the grant of rights is pretty darn ironclad, and they all agreed to it. And so it's like, what leg do you have to stand on? And yet, like you said, they've both made a case now that they have a leg to stand on in different ways. And so if either one of those or both would win or get out of it, then there's going to be a rush to, you know, North Carolina's going to look for something else, and Virginia and
Duke,
Louisville and Duke. Yeah. I mean, you know, like, it, and again, does it end up with like the Big Ten and the SEC? That's what everybody's been, you know, forecasting for a few years now. Like, I just end up with, you know, the Big Ten has, you know, 30 teams and the SEC has 30 teams, and then do you break them off? You know, that's why I sort of say it jokingly, but is, you know, you end up with an SEC division that is the ACC, and an SEC division that's the old SEC, and a Big Ten that is, you know, Pac-10 and Big Ten. Like, well, why did we ever do this?
I mean, I
why
think
we
you
bring all these things together just to split them back up.
I think you do wind up with that.
I think you probably do. I mean, it's a logical endpoint of this is like, well, the Big Ten now has 24 teams that go from Rutgers to Seattle. How do we make this work? Well, you know what we do? We split them up into West and East, and well, that works out pretty well. Yeah.
The one that I think is the interesting wrinkle, and where I think, to go back to your question of where could this end, is you've got the Big Ten and the SEC are stuck with who they already have.
Yeah.
But then they, you know, they pick the bones of the ACC like they did the Pac-12. And then the Big 12's just there. They're, you know, they're the other 30-team conference.
To pick up the rest.
And it's like, that's where VodTech goes. Yeah. I mean, that'll be where.
Yeah, you could see that. Yeah.
You know, you're going to see Miami, Florida State, Clemson, Duke, North Carolina, Virginia. They'll all have a home.
Those are the ones that seem to, yeah. But the Boston colleges, the Syracuse, the, you know, the Pitt, like, are all those that attractive? Probably not. Virginia Tech. That Yormark guy seems to have a bottomless appetite when it comes to expansion. So, yeah, the Big 12 could end up the Big 24 in a few years.
Well, and I think one thing that I think you might see if it goes that way, and I really, truly believe this, it is those schools start saying, well, we're going to treat basketball different. Not that they're going to treat football different. They're going to treat basketball different. And all of a sudden, the old Big East and the new Big East is just the gigantic East. And, those schools are all playing against each other again. And, you know, because I think on some level, that's where the Big 12 went, is they're like, well, if we just become an apex basketball conference, we're the new ACC.
It's an interesting strategy because, the Big Ten and SEC, they're both good in basketball, certainly, and the brands they've added are good. But football is the driving force. And it almost feels like, the Big 12 mentality has been like, well, we're not going to be able to keep up football-wise. We don't have any of the absolute, highest level programs. We don't have Michigan, Ohio State, Texas, Oklahoma, Alabama, LSU, etc. So let's lean into the basketball. We've got Kansas, we've got Arizona, we've got Baylor, we've got Cincinnati, we've got Houston, you know, we've got good basketball programs, and let's lean further and further into it. 20 years ago, I think it would have been really smart. Now, like we've talked about with college basketball, it doesn't have the same feel that it used to. But maybe they can resurrect it, maybe with NIL and all that and guys staying in college longer, maybe they can get it back to feeling like, hey, this is equally big or close to equally big.
Well, and even if not equally big, I understand that football is year round. I get that.
Sure.
But games and television, you know, you can do talking head shows.
Sure.
But the actual games, the actual programming for CBS, ESPN, Fox.
Is essentially 3 months.
Yeah. Well, basketball is five. And if a 2014 conference and all of a sudden you don't care what night you play, which the Big 12 has made it clear they don't.
They do not. Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's great inventory. That I even have thought of that, you know, in terms of just college basketball in general and what keeps it even afloat is mostly the tournament. But it is. It's great inventory for ESPN and Fox and CBS in January, February, March, when the, you know, football's over or it's down to just the postseason, so there's less games. And so, yeah, I mean, you put games on ESPN, you know, every night of the week. They don't carry MLB anymore, except for Sunday night. So you're not competing with that, you know, if you're into that time of year. You know, yeah, it does make sense to, you know, just lean into that. And again, I mean, I don't think college basketball will ever, I shouldn't say ever, in the near future equal college football. But, you know, maybe with NIL and stuff like that, guys will stay longer.
Well, and the other thing is,
they'll stay in college. I mean, we saw the G League team shut down, or is going to shut down. You know, so that's interesting. I mean, stuff like that is like, it just catches my eye of like, hey, maybe it's not going to feel like it did in the 90s. Never will. But maybe college basketball can have a little resurgence with, you know, the second and third tier type players realizing like, hey, it benefits me to stay in college for 4 or 5 years and go to the NBA and be completely forgotten and end up playing, you know, in Israel or Spain or China or something like that. And like, well, whatever happened to that guy? I don't know.
But if I'm Brett Yormark, what I'm thinking is add, pivot to basketball and say, look, we're going to fill your programming. We're going to fill their programming. And then you can also roll the dice with your Netflix, Apple TV, Prime.
Yeah.
Because you've got so much inventory.
That's very true.
You know, that you say like, hey, we're doing the Big 12 Prime game of the week on Friday nights. And, you know, maybe it'll be Kansas or Arizona, but that still leaves Houston, Baylor, Cincinnati for everybody
else.
Well,
if you can pick off some of like the newer ACC team, you know, I think of Syracuse, Louisville. I mean, those are good basketball programs. Louisville's fallen on some very hard times, but historically, great program. Syracuse, you know, like, get a few more of those if the ACC does crumble, and you end up, absolutely being like, wow, this is darn good basketball. And I mean, maybe, you know, I think this is kind of what you were saying. Maybe you even, like, work with the Big East and become, you know, like a mega conference with them and bring in, you know, the Georgetowns and the St. John's and the Seton Halls and UConn's. And I mean,
Marquette.
They won at UConn. A couple years back, they were about to add UConn in the Big 12. So, you know, like that. I think it makes sense in a way. You're not going to compete with the football dollars that the Big Ten and the SEC have. You're just not. So, how do you make the best of a situation? It's probably lean heavily into the basketball, and hope that that's enough. And it might be.
Well, and the thing is, it's just when you think about it, also for college football. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. That's your window, right, for games.
Sure.
You can only offer it. But with basketball, you can offer to fill programming every night of
seven
the week.
Yeah.
And you can offer to do it from, you know, the first late October exhibition through the second week of March.
True. Yeah. So, I mean, gosh, you could have a two-week conference tournament if you wanted to. If you grew to 24 teams, you know, you have like the bottom 16 play a sort of a round robin or something like that to get in. And then you have a 16 team tournament the next week or something, you know, like there's a way to do that too. Like, we're going to have a tournament this week to feed into the actual tournament next week.
Yeah. And I just, you know, I just think if you are trying to zig when everyone else is zagging, it seems like a realistic way to do it.
It's probably the only way to do it is embrace the basketball, because you can't fool people into thinking that a conference with Oklahoma State, Kansas State, Colorado, Utah is a football power. It just isn't. There's good programs. You might end up with a team or two that, you know, could win a national title, but it's not going to measure up to a conference that has Michigan, Ohio State, USC, Penn State, or a conference that has Alabama, Texas, Oklahoma, LSU, Florida, Georgia. It just isn't. So you don't fight a battle you can't win. You fight a battle you can win.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, look, are you going to get the SEC football TV contract on this basketball thing I'm pitching? No. But can your basketball contract be the basketball equivalent where you are out kicking everybody by a mile?
Yeah. No, and you're exactly right about, you know, inventory, programming. I mean, I've said for years, as I've, you know, thought more and more about it, that that's why the Bulls exist. The Bulls don't exist anymore because they need anything. They exist because they're great TV inventory for a time of year when there's nothing else on. It's the end of December. People are home on Christmas break. Kids are home. And so you put some bowl games on. People don't really watch them closely, but they're on. They're on in the background. The commercials still sell, and that's why they exist. And you know, like, that's not the greatest product, but I think it's an akin to what you could do with this, hopefully a better product as well, of, you know, just flood the marketplace. And yeah, we'll put games on your network 7 days a week if you want them, or five or six. And you know, give us what you want, and we'll give you what you want.
Well, and the thing is, you also can piece out, you know, okay, so you're giving, let's say you are committing to giving ESPN five games a week.
Uh-huh.
If you got a 24-team conference playing two games a week, you got 19 more games.
That's true.
That you can parcel out and say, yeah, ESPN, you get your pick. We will guarantee you one of these schools on each of these five nights.
Yeah.
But then you can still double back to CBS and say, hey, your Sunday afternoon post golf game, or your you know, post NFL, pre NFL, like, yeah, we got you.
Yeah,
you'll get Arizona, Kansas. Congratulations. Yeah. We're gonna give you Arizona, Kansas. And then you turn around to, you know, whether it's Fox Sports or a streamer or TBS TNT might be interested, mm-hmm. since they do the, you know, they do the tournament.
Yeah.
And you say, what would you like? Because, there, you know, one of the things as a fan in the exiting the Pac-12 is I no longer have to worry about creating content for the network. I don't have a conference network that I need to give content to.
I'm
going to sell my content to all of these different places. And ultimately, if it's, you know, $500,000 for the dead last game to just stream it on, you know, Amazon Prime or Apple TV, that's $500,000 more. That's 20 grand a school.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, yeah, I think it makes sense in a lot of ways. And yeah, if the ACC does end up, you know, crumbling or whatever, being picked off, you know, yeah, if you could get some of those basketball powers, Wake Forest, you know, we haven't mentioned them, but that's a, you know, they're not a power, but they're
a historically good school. Tim Duncan, Chris Paul.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and they'd probably be left behind in the North Carolina mix. Like UNC, NC State probably end up together. You would hope Duke stays with them, but Wake probably gets left behind. So, you know, you poach them. If you poach Louisville, Syracuse, you know, the programs that, like, you think basketball first, even if they have good football too. I mean, Louisville's good football program, but you think basketball when you think Louisville. Like, you know, yeah, the more of those you can get to add to Kansas, Arizona, Baylor, Houston, Iowa State,
Cincinnati,
Texas Tech, you know, it makes for a fun conference. I mean, I will admit, you know, as an ASU fan, like, Big 12 football doesn't really get me excited, but am I interested to see, like, who we're going to get at home next year for basketball? Yeah. You know, I mean, it's not maybe as interested as I might have been 15 years ago when we were in college, but, you know, if we get Kansas or Baylor or someone like that, it's like, well, I probably will make sure I can go to that game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you know, you just, like you said, you know, football is the zig, If the Big 12 zags and you know, leans into basketball and says, hey, this is the preeminent destination for college basketball, it's probably the only way that works.
Well, and if you go that route, if you, you know, the alliance that never was between the ACC, Big 10, and Pac-12, but if you could do it for basketball and do it with the Big East and the West Coast Conference, oh my goodness, what a time you could have where you guarantee, hey, Gonzaga's going to play, you know, Marquette, or, you know, Arizona's going to be playing against Creighton.
Seton Hall. Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, those Big East basketball programs are fun. I mean, they just are. I enjoy that. I miss the old days of the Big East when you had Syracuse and those programs too. But I mean, those are good programs. And so, yeah, that would be great. I'd love to have, you know, a Big East, Big 12 thing where, you know, every year somebody came to ASU and then ASU went to another place.
Yeah.
That'd be sweet. You know, you give me Georgetown coming to ASU or Providence, or like, I would go to those.
Yeah.
That'd be something a little different.
St. John's, Seton Hall, of those would be kind of interesting games, if nothing else.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, that is the thing. Like, I will miss the football against USC and Oregon. I will miss those, and the replacements just aren't the same. I mean, I've looked at the schedule this year many times in the home games, and it's like, man, what's the one game that I just can't miss? There isn't one. But with basketball, I do think this will be almost a nice refresh for a short time. While I'll miss UCLA basketball, I will. But, you know, like, Pac-12 basketball hasn't been that good of late. And there haven't been that many programs. I'm like, well, I got to make sure I see them this year. But there will be some of that next year. I mean, we're not going to play everybody at home. But if we get Houston or Baylor or Kansas or any, you know, we should get some of those teams. It's like, yeah, I'll probably make sure I'm going to that. Or, you know, do what I can to go at least, because those are fun programs that I haven't seen in person for a long time, if ever.
Yeah. Well, let's kind of bring this back to this year's tournament. In light of all that you have seen, do you still feel comfortable and confident in your, you know, champion?
UConn?
Yeah.
I do. I mean, they've only played one game. Obviously, they haven't played their second round game, but they, I mean, the one thing I'll say for them is they put it to, you know, the 16 seed. Like, you know, it's sometimes those games are like that early season game against FCS opponent where it's like, you know, you should win and you'll probably win no matter what. But if you struggle some, like, oh boy, that's worrisome. They didn't struggle at all. Like, that was a beat down from like the 5 minute mark in. They were up by 20 plus points. So yeah, I haven't seen anything that makes me back off it yet. I think they'll beat Northwestern today. I think that's Northwestern's got some injuries and it was a good win for them beating FAU, but I don't think they can, you know, so like, yeah, I still feel pretty good about it. You had UConn as well. You think any different?
No, I feel good about it. I think that the one thing I am glad I did was I gave a lot of credit to the ones.
Yes.
Obviously, my thinking that, like, some of my thinking on, like, injured guys who are hurt in the tournament, their conference tournaments, like Florida, didn't go so well, where I was like, oh, they'll rally. It'll be fine. It wasn't.
Kansas. I know. You picked Kansas to go deeper than I did.
Yeah.
You know, I picked them Sweet 16, which was a hedge. I think you had – did you have them Elite Eight?
I had Elite Eight. And I just sort of thought, like, oh, well, they'll rally. They, you know, this is a coach who knows what he's – it's like
– And I kind of thought they would, too. I didn't have Gonzaga looking as good as they did. I mean, they've looked good through two games. They played really well in February, and I even thought, you know, they could make a run. And I got scared off by they lost in the West Coast final to St. Mary's, and I thought, they're going to go out early. Like, I should have given them more credit. That's one I wish I could do over.
Yeah. But, yeah, overall, I'm happy with, you know, my champion. I have no interest in redoing it.
I mean, I still got my Final Four alive 3 days in. Mm-hmm. I had 3 1 seeds and Marquette. you know, we'll see. A few of them are in action today. So, but nobody lost in the first round. So that's always nice if you're, if you're not, you know, doomed right away. I had South Carolina. That was kind of, I don't know why I bought into them. I don't have any good logic, but I had them going Elite Eight. That blew up on me real quick. But other than that, you know, didn't take a ton of chances. And so far it's been a fairly chalky tournament. Meaning, you know, the eight teams that are in, you know, you got NC State, but they were the higher seeded team in the second round game. And I think everybody else is either a five or above right now for the teams that have advanced to the Sweet 16.
Yeah.
So, yeah, again, hopefully it sets up for some good matchups, you know, next week and a good Final Four. I mean, that's what you want. You know, the upsets are fun, but ultimately you want, you know, the best teams to play each other. And it's shaping up so far that may happen this year. You know, a North Carolina Arizona Elite Eight. I want Arizona to lose in the Sweet 16, obviously, but you know, that'd be a fun game. You know, UConn and Iowa State or UConn Illinois, like, yeah, those would be good games. I'd be watching.
Yeah, I agree. Like, we're gonna get to the Blue Bloods, and that'll be fun.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see what happens today, and we'll reevaluate, you know, next weekend. I'm sure we'll talk sometime and you know, we'll be down to eight or so by that point.
Yeah.
Moves quick. That's one thing about the tournament that I always, you know, kind of just like marvel at is like you spend all this time waiting to find out who your 64 or 68 or whatever are. And then within 4 days, three quarters of them are out.
Yeah. It's one of the things that makes the tournament great.
It is. I mean, there's no other postseason like that where it's like, well, you have this field and then, you know, 75% of it is eliminated within 4 days. You know, like usually it's like, well, you got the NBA, they get 16, and then you got, you know, 2 weeks of first round and 2 weeks of second round, and it's painstaking. But yeah, college basketball, it's like, well, all these teams make it, 48 of the 64 done within the first week.
Mm-hmm. Well, when they expand to 96 or 128 or whatever
it
is.
Yes. Well, don't you know, because the SEC didn't play well this week, that means Greg Sankey will back off his drive to keep hoping, folks. He's not going to back off, and he's going to get what he wants, probably.
Yeah. It's all we do is give Greg Sankey what he wants.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I'd love to think that he's sitting in his office thinking, you know what, y'all are right. We should keep it as is because of all these magical upsets, but I don't think he is, man. I don't think he cares.
Yeah. I can't remember who it was. Somebody had a column that was basic, or no, was it a coach who said, you know, these minor conferences are just an inconvenient impediment, like that, you know.
I didn't see that, but yeah.
Like they don't really mind or care, you know?
No, I mean, I did see, you know, Izzo, who I like Izzo for the most part, but Izzo basically said, like, you know, we got to rethink these auto bids for all the, and it's like, man, that's what makes the tournament, man. It's the only thing that's keeping college basketball nationally relevant is the NCAA tournament. Like, let's not ruin it, but probably going to try to, because if something's good, somebody out there wants to try to screw with it, it seems like.
Yeah. It's good, but it could be better. And by better, we mean make more money.
By better, we mean get, you know, like 18 and 12 Iowa in there, because we really need that. We need those teams. Yeah, we need Iowa and Rutgers and LSU. Those teams have got to be in, even though they went like two games over 500.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, whatever. This was fun. No.
Yeah. So we'll wrap it on that note.
Yeah, until next
time. Maybe next time we'll check in on some pre-WrestleMania.
I love it. Until the next time, he's Matt. I'm Ben. It's the Ben Matt Sportscast.